You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Irirangi Pō, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
We're going international.
Yep, we are. And we're starting with some pretty recent news. It's actually still developing, but I'm going to give you kind of whatever has sort of come out, which is that Indonesia's had a pretty serious earthquake in the last day or two. Earthquake was followed by a tsunami, and it hit the central west coast of an island called Sulawesi, which was formerly called Celebes, years ago, and it was a 7.5 magnitude shock. The quake shook the city of Palu because it was centered about up the coast, about 90 kilometers north of Palu, so that's the equivalent distance of here to Hamilton, so not very far away. It destroyed a lot of buildings and triggered a tsunami, which caused 18-foot waves to flow down the bay and just wash through the city. 2.4 million people have been affected by the quake, and around 1,200 people have been killed. The early warning system kind of worked to an extent. Like, Indonesia's been developing an early warning system, but the problem is that the quake was underestimated, and the potential for a tsunami was as well, because it was suspected to happen on dry land, and they didn't anticipate because it happened on dry land at the top of a bay. They didn't anticipate the shock for the bay to trap the waves, essentially, and almost cause a funnel effect where it just went straight down this bay. It was felt quite far away. It was felt on the west coast of Borneo. It was felt in Singapore, actually.
Oh, my God.
The west coast of Borneo was kind of the biggest fear, because cities there, like Balikpapan and Banjarmasin, are where Indonesia's oil and natural gas reserves are.
Mm.
So there was worries about oil spills,
right,
or anything like that.
But
major
so
environmental
far
disasters. That hasn't happened, which
right
is really
That's
good.
Lucky.
The earthquake kind of wasn't on the same scale as the 2004 Asian tsunami or the one in Lombok, because those disasters happened in areas that had huge economic consequences. So you think about Lombok and Bali. Everyone knows someone who's gone on holiday to
right
Lombok and Bali.
Whereas
those are huge money makers for the place. So it was the loss of life and the loss of houses were obviously huge for this quake, but kind of in a way it didn't have the added injury of affecting people's long-term incomes by driving tourists away or driving ships away or anything
but
like that.
But on a safety and health level, it's still a really big...
Absolutely, yeah. And as well, looking at the Indonesian papers as well, we have to kind of think as well, even though the disaster hit a city of 350,000, so the same size as Christchurch, Indonesia is a country of 261 million people, so 350,000 out of 261 is not a huge ratio of the population. So that's why Indonesian press, the information has been really, really sketchy, because the opinion
right
in Indonesia is essentially that, you know, it ratio of the population. It's a bit like, for them, it's the equivalent of when an earthquake happens in Sedan here, and everyone, you know, and it's like people are like, it's bad, but they're sort of like, well, not many people were affected, so yeah, which is terrible.
So none of their press is reporting it, hardly.
The press are reporting it, but they're not really, it's not on the same scale as the BBC and CNN and all that lot are reporting it. Just, it's really just, here are the facts, here are the people, you know, it's like...
Interesting.
Yeah, it's very, very strange. And I think in that context, one has to remember that Sulawesi is definitely one of the more far-flung parts of the country. Like, the majority... And that's by virtue of the fact that, like, not many people live there. It's a big island, only 18 million people are on it. It's like the 11th largest island in the world. And for the same reason not many people live on the South Island, is because the majority of the island is mountains. And human beings don't live on mountains. We live in awful some river valleys and by the sea. That's where we live. So there's not many people there who live on that island relative to the space. It's pretty untouched. I mean, the history of the place, Europeans tried to colonize it, and then when they saw they tried to colonize it when they saw a massive jungle full of disease and mountains and stuff, they were like, yeah, nah. So it's pretty untouched. Like, the majority of people just kind of live the way they have for thousands and thousands of years. And they haven't really had that many tourists or much economic investment, because there's been issues of, there've been travel warnings there. There's been issues of Muslim Christian fighting that came to a head in 2000, where 191 school children were hacked to death with machetes. over 2 days. They've had issues with Abu Sayyaf pirates from Philippines kidnapping people off the coast and holding them to ransom. They've had and Abu Sayyaf, you know, they're not really a huge deal. They're kind of crappy ISIS. They're the worst out of any jihadists around the world. They're not really that good. They just take they're not like on the scale of jihadists, like they're nowhere near ISIS in Syria. They're just pirates.
I mean, I think
but they still drive people
that's
away.
That's just a comment on their strategy as opposed to calling someone crappy.
Yeah. They don't get that much investment, and they're pretty kind of like, and that's why the destruction has been so huge. The buildings aren't up to code because the government has been pouring so much money into Jakarta and Bali.
Right, and not other places. So you would hope that maybe this could be an opportunity for some regional development, because clearly they need it.
Well, you'd hope so. The problem is that the sectarian violence was focused around Palu, so that's why people are kind of like, okay, let's see what the tribal relations are like. Let's see what the religious relations are like. Let's see if it's actually safe for people to go here. There's a lot the Indonesian government needs to do. They need to up national security around there to keep those pirates away. They need to start attracting investors. They need to improve transport infrastructure, because one of the biggest issues with this rescue operation is that the sea isn't safe because of pirates. The roads are in terrible condition. There's one dirt track going from Makassar to Palu. And the airport has only just been opened and it's not very big.
Right.
So it really is a mission to get there anyway. And the problem is, you compare it to other disasters Indonesia's had, like the Surabaya mud volcano, the quakes in Lombok, the quakes in Bali, the Asian tsunami. In general, Indonesia has always come off worse than its neighbours. It's always come off, it hasn't had the same recovery that Thailand or Malaysia or even, Vietnam has had. And that's because of corruption.
Right.
Simply due to corruption. And so until Indonesia stop pouring so much money into Jakarta and pretending they're a megacity and actually start pouring money around the other islands that they own, this sort of thing is only going to happen again and again when quakes hit. I'm not going to advise people to go to Sulawesi because the security situation
Connor, I don't know if people would listen to you if you did that.
I'm not going to do that because the security situation is not guaranteed even today.
But it's more just it has detrimental effects, and it could be an opportunity if we reported it well enough for them to grow from it, which is why we're giving it attention now.
Absolutely.
And speaking of opportunity, I think it's worth mentioning that the Indonesian presidency will be up for grabs again next year. So how will this go out?
How about that for timing?
And how will President Joko Widodo handles this situation will be crucial. And considering the election will be less than a year away.
So moral of the story, Indonesia, focus on your other islands. God damn it.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.